Inside the 20 with a new set of downs. Here's Brady. Pass. What a catch! Gronkowski, touchdown!
The Patriots clinched a first-round bye for the eighth consecutive season, courtesy of their 37-16 victory over the Buffalo Bills on Sunday, a win that was aided by an amazing one-handed catch by Rob Gronkowski, and once again, the officials. They overturned yet another opponent touchdown against the Patriots. Hi, everyone. I'm Chris Gasper. It's Tuesday, December 26th, and welcome to Season Ticket. Joining us to help break down this game, we now bring in Boston Globe online columnist and media columnist Chad Finn. Chad, how was your Christmas?
My Christmas was good, Chris. I have two fairly young kids, so it's pretty hectic, but rewarding when you see their happy faces.
Speaking of rewarding, the Patriots get this victory. They are rewarded with that all-important first-round bye. They still haven't locked up home field advantage because the Pittsburgh Steelers won on Christmas Day. How do you evaluate this performance for the Patriots? I don't think they're playing their best football as we come down the stretch.
No, it doesn't feel like a December Patriots team, does it? Where they've got this history, it's almost part of their identity that you expect them to be playing their best in December going into the postseason. It's the habit of certainly the best teams they've had through the years. And right now, it feels like more questions are popping up than you expected to have at this point in the season. Brady has not been his usual sharp self as consistently as he usually is. They've had guys in and out of the lineup because of injuries, so they've had continuity issues in a couple of spots. And I don't think we still are really certain what their defense is. So they when you have a December where you're still asking questions that you might have been asking in September, that's not typical of the Patriots.
What's the biggest question you have? What's your biggest concern?
I want to know how healthy Tom Brady is, because CBS had a great stat. I think it was about halfway through the broadcast. Tony Romo and Jim Nance, their number one team, does such a good job that on third down, I think it was over the last 5 weeks, he's thrown one touchdown and six interceptions. That is not December Tom Brady. That's nothing. That's backup at Michigan Tom Brady, maybe. We don't usually see this sort of thing out of him. So immediately when that happens, you start thinking, okay, is this going to be one of those seasons where he slips a little bit late in the year, and then you find out in February that he was playing with this injury or that. Something we thought was right wasn't right at all. So to me, he's not a concern. He's just what I'm watching, because he doesn't look like his usual self quite enough.
You mentioned those six interceptions. They've come in the last five games. He's thrown an interception in five consecutive games. It's the first time that he has done that since 2002, which was his first full season as a starter. Obviously, in 2001, he takes over for Drew Bledsoe. And in this game, the only Buffalo touchdown was courtesy of Tom Brady.
And now with a third down and eight snap to Brady. Throws underneath. Ball's picked off. Poyer jumped the route and intercepted a throw for Britt. Got back on his feet to the 15, to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone. That's a pick six. And Buffalo has the lead.
This is one of the worst starts to a football game I've ever seen. Really.
Offensively, you look at that game. There's no Rex Burkhead. There's no James White, who was the hero of Super Bowl 51 and somebody that Brady trusts implicitly. Chris Hogan's out of the lineup. They're running plays for Kenny Britt and Philip Dorsett. I wonder how much that affects Brady's performance and, by extension, the offense's performance.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but he still has his a couple A-list guys out there with him. He's got Gronk, who's playing as well as he has in years. Deion Lewis, you can tell when a national broadcaster really hasn't paid attention to the Patriots when he calls Deion Lewis a third down back. Deion Lewis is a really, really good football player. I think he had a career high in carries yesterday at 124 rushing yards, I believe. He's someone who you can really rely on in a lot of different ways. So Brady, they've had guys come in and out of the lineup, but he's still got his better guys out there. And if you remember, last week against Pittsburgh, he threw a pass to James White that was picked off where there were at least three Steelers around him. So I don't know if it's specific to the personnel that he's playing with, but rather that Brady is making some uncharacteristically curious decisions.
Yeah, that could be part of it. There's no question about it. He's turned the football over here in the second half. I wonder if the Alex Guerrero thing has anything to do with it. This was a home game in terms of Alex Guerrero, his, I guess, health guru and also his business partner with the TB12 Sports Therapy Center. He's not allowed on the sidelines for games, and it was road games he was being on the sidelines for before. He's not allowed on the team plane. Maybe there's something there, some sort of friction there, or just mentally something that's affecting Brady. That's a possibility. But he's certainly not playing his best, which is a concern as we come down the stretch. I do want to talk about Deion Lewis, because I think he's fascinating this year when you look at what he's done.
And his usage?
His usage. I thought this game told you something about Deion Lewis. And going into this game with no Burkhead and James White, I said, this is going to tell you how they feel about Deion Lewis. Do they look at him as somebody that has to be managed and on a pitch count? Or do they look at him as somebody who can get 29, 30 touches a game? And as you mentioned, you got the 24 carries for 129 yards and then 5 receptions for 24 yards. He was a bell cow back, and that tells me that they look at him and say, no, he's not just a third down back. He's somebody that we can rely on. But in the beginning of the year, he was buried on the depth chart.
Yeah,
I think that was a misevaluation by the Patriots early in the year not to go to Deion Lewis earlier.
Well, you think about, if you go back there, when David Johnson got hurt for the Cardinals, there were all kinds of rumors that Deion Lewis was going to be traded out there, that he was, a very good player, but maybe someone that they didn't necessarily have a use for at this point in time. So I wonder if it's that, or I wonder if it's they recognize that this is not a small guy. He's rugged but short, and he has an injury history.
Well, that's the thing. He has that injury history, and we all remember he was ripping it up in 2015, and then he tears his ACL against the Washington Redskins at Gillette Stadium, and I wonder if that's what it is, because you know how Belichick feels there. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, reliability is more important than ability is sort of one of their sayings. And I'm not sure they thought in the beginning of the year that Deion Lewis was someone they could rely on. Now they have to, and it's worked out.
They should have thought that. I'm curious of whether they thought after the knee injury in 2015, where he was just dynamic, a really fun guy to watch, he gets hurt. I wonder if they looked at his 2016 season and said, he's lost half a step. He's not the player he was. This may not be the reliable guy he was in the first half of 2015.
Yeah, he's certainly been reliable for them this year. He's their leading rusher, 803 yards on the season, and he's averaging 5.2 yards per carry. He's been outstanding for them. Another guy that's really carried this offense, I think, is Rob Gronkowski, and he had a huge game, maybe not numbers-wise, but certainly impact-wise on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. It was interesting. I asked him a question after the game about why the Bills bring out the best in him. His numbers against the Bills are insane. He has his highest amount of catches, yards, and touchdown receptions against Buffalo than any other opponent. He's from the Buffalo area. And it was interesting because he actually gave you a little bit of insight into it. He said that he remembers the Bills passing on him twice in the 2010 draft, and they drafted some guy named Terrell Troop with the 41st pick. Buffalo did one pick before the Patriots took Gronkowski, and he's been taking it out on them ever since. We played the sound, that ridiculous one-handed catch. He had 5 catches for 67 yards, but he also had the key pass interference penalty that set up Mike Gillisley's 1-yard touchdown in the third quarter that finally put the Patriots ahead for good. They were at 16-16 until that point. I think you can make a case that Gronk's an MVP candidate.
Interesting. Even more so than Brady, or is Brady still your front runner?
They might split the vote, but here's the thing. I think what speaks volumes about Gronk is how does the offense perform when he's out? When he missed that Tampa Bay game, they only scored 19 points, and Brady didn't look great. When he missed the Miami game, Brady looked terrible.
Yeah.
They scored 20 points. Brady throws 2 picks. When Gronkowski's not in there, I know it's a small sample size, but Brady looks pretty mortal, and Brady hasn't done much here coming down the stretch. The MVP race is wide open. I think you can make a case for Gronk.
He definitely deserves some consideration, though. I'd have Brady higher, and maybe Todd Gurley. Antonio Brown would have been in the mix for missing the last couple of games. The thing with Gronk is there was the debate earlier in the year. Who's more valuable to the Patriots, Julian Edelman or Gronk? I've always been Gronk in that debate, even after Edelman went out this season, because you look back, I think it was the Do Your Job documentary on the NFL Network after the Patriots beat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick says in that documentary, a main reason for their Super Bowl drought was that Gronkowski had been injured late in the season so many times when they had gotten to the Giants Super Bowl or lost to the Ravens or whatever it happened to be. That's the only acknowledgement I've ever heard from Belichick that one single player can have that sort of impact on winning or losing a Super Bowl. Taking that one player out of the lineup has such a swing. He's never said that about any other player he's ever coached here, even Brady.
Yeah, that's a great point by you. And I know everyone will say, well, they won it last year with them. They won the Super Bowl. Well, you had Julian Edelman. And now you don't have Julian Edelman, and Chris Hogan's banged up, and you don't have Malcolm Mitchell, who bailed you out in that Falcons Super Bowl. So it's a little different. Gronk's importance to this team is obvious, and you look at it, he's a guy they can't afford to lose. I want to talk a little bit about the defense. I thought they did a great job in the red zone. Obviously, it was 0-for-4 for Buffalo in the red zone. However, I think that Tyrod Taylor at times missed some throws and missed some guys that were open. And then you also had the controversial touchdown wiped off the board right before halftime. Kelvin Benjamin going up over Stephon Gilmore, ruled the touchdown on the field, overruled on replay review. So what did you think of the Patriots' defense and that replay decision?
Yeah, defense was interesting because we thought, I think, for most of the year that the defensive backfield was their strength. Stephon Gilmore's making a lot of money, and the rest of the guys are pretty accomplished players with Super Bowl rings here. But the defensive line was pretty good. That's the first time I can remember seeing Malcolm Brown make multiple big plays over the course of a game, and a couple of them came in the same series. So maybe they're not as bad off in the front seven as we thought when Dont'a Hightower went down.
So here are the Bills on first down play action. Taylor taken down at the 10-yard line by Malcolm Brown.
But they may not be as good in the secondary as we thought based on the name recognition and accomplishments of those guys.
Yeah, I think they need Kyle Van Noy back. They did a great job containing Tyrod Taylor, but you know, Taylor's just not a consistent enough passer to really hurt them. Buffalo did move the ball quite a bit. They were able to rack up yards, 326 of them, but not get into the end zone. On that review play,
up top he goes. Oh, he caught it. Did he get the feet down?
He's in.
Yes, what a catch.
To me, the Jesse James one against Pittsburgh the week before, I thought that was the right call. People don't like the rule. I don't like the rule, but I was okay with that being overturned. This one I was not okay with, not because I'm 100% sure it was a touchdown,
right,
but because I'm also not 100% sure he didn't get the foot down. And the way replay works is it's supposed to be clear and incontrovertible evidence. And if it is clear and incontrovertible, it doesn't take as long as it took referee Craig Rolstead and Alberto Riveron, senior vice president of officiating back in the command center in New York, that long to figure it out. I think Riveron's getting to a point where he's overturning these calls when it's like 60-40,
right,
that he could be right. And that's not the way replay is supposed to work. I think he's perverted the replay system. And I think that was 100% not the right call because there just wasn't clear enough evidence there to say that, yes, that call on the field was absolutely wrong. And I'll tell you this, after the game, Buffalo Bills safety Micah Hyde said he spoke to the officials outside of the referee, who's the only one who gets to go to that tablet and look at the replay, and they said there's a reason we made the call on the field. So I think now you're at a point where Riveron might be alienating some of the rank-and-file officials by sort of doing a best guess when he gets into these replay situations and saying, okay, I'm like 51% sure that this is the right call, so I'm going to overturn it.
And it took forever, too. I figured what they were trying to figure out was whether the ball was bouncing around in his hands at the point where one foot was down or where it looked like he had the second one down. If you need to take that much time to overturn a call that you're not sure about, go with what the officials called on the field. It backs them up, and you're going to be nitpicked either way on a play like that. The Bills fans are going to hate it. The Patriots fans are going to love it, and vice versa if it goes in the opposite direction. So it's just so micromanaged, and it adds nothing to the game. It takes away from the appeal of football, throws this delay in where maybe there's some momentum building in the game, and then all of a sudden everybody's come to a stop. It's not the right thing. And compared to the Pittsburgh play last week, which, just like the Tuck rule, was a correct interpretation of an absurd rule, this was something where you couldn't even tell in slow motion, so go with the call that was made on the field. It's really simple, and they have to complicate it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that, Chad. Well, it's pretty simple for the Patriots, though. If they win on Sunday against the New York Jets at home, they will be the number one seed in the AFC. They will have home field, so that's what's ahead of them. All right, there's more from us after the break here. We're going to take a quick timeout on Season Ticket. When we come back, we're going to talk some Celtics. They've been slumping. They didn't bring any Christmas cheer to Celtics fans at the Garden yesterday. Stay with us. Welcome back to Season Ticket. Season Ticket is now available on Spotify. So if you want to listen to us there, all you have to do is this. Just search for Season Ticket, hit the follow button, done. Of course, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe there. You can also subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, back now. As promised, we're going to talk about the Celtics, one of the lone bright spots in their 111-103 loss to the Washington Wizards on Christmas Day at TD Garden. Rookie Jason Tatum, he played great.
Satoransky, and look at Tatum right in his grill. And then Tatum strips it. Satoransky gets it back, has to throw it up there with one on the shot clock. Rozier out of there with it. Celtics looking to retake the lead. Tatum, you bet!
So Tatum had 20 points in the very first Christmas home game in Celtics history, but that was about it, Chad, in terms of the Celtics performing at the level we're accustomed to. They couldn't hold a lead in the fourth quarter. They couldn't get rebounds when they needed to. They turned the ball over a ton. How concerned are you about the Celtics now? This is 9-8. That's their record since the famed 16-game winning streak.
Yeah, certainly concerned to some degree. I don't know if I could put a number on it at this point. I want to see how the next few games play out, especially with Houston. I think that's, what, Thursday? Coming up pretty soon. So they're just in a grind on the schedule. It's 12 games in 19 days, and you can see that that's having some effect. But there are also things that are happening that they should easily correct, and they aren't. They were absolutely atrocious rebounding against the Wizards. It was seemed like, especially in the last 6 minutes of the game, every time there was a loose ball, it ended up with the Wizards. And it didn't matter where it was. It could have been under the basket. Could have been a long rebound that went out to 18 feet. The Celtics never got that ball. And at one point, Brad put in Marcus Smart with about 4 minutes left. And we know what he does. He's the guy who gets those basketballs.
Yeah, he's a junkyard dog.
Yeah, and makes the play that maybe saves the game, but you don't see in the box score. He didn't even make those plays. It was really frustrating to watch. The Wizards played like this was an extension of their playoff series last year. The Celtics played it like it was Christmas and they couldn't wait to get home. And they've had a few of those lately. It's a little bit frustrating to watch after seeing all the good things that they've accomplished so far this season.
And you look at the rebounding numbers. It was Wizards 47 rebounds and Celtics 45 rebounds. But that didn't really tell the story of what it was in the game. And when the rebounds that really mattered, as you mentioned, the Celtics didn't get. They look like a little bit of a tired team right now. I think they're also sort of relying too much on Kyrie Irving. What's interesting, Chad, is that now in this stretch, I mentioned 9-8 since the 16-game winning streak, also 5-6 in their last 11. And that record could be worse if not for that miracle in Indianapolis where the Pacers literally threw the game away and Terry Rozier got that steal and dunk to win it. When I look at what's going on with them, there's some thought that which team are they, I guess, is the question I'm trying to ask you. Are they the team that won 16 in a row, or are they this team that, without Gordon Hayward and what they currently have, is a closer to a above 500 team?
I think they're a team that maybe got a little bit too happy with itself when they won 16 in a row and stopped doing some of the small things that really went right for them. The rebounding, the constant defensive pressure. Kelly Oubre got open late in that game last night, but whenever he wanted to, corner three after a corner jumper. And he's a guy who's not exactly thrilled with the Celtics these days either. I don't want to say it's an effort thing because they play hard, but it's almost like the mental lapse has been coming at exactly the time when you would hope it wouldn't. I think that's correctable. Brad has talked about how they need a little bit of practice time here to correct a couple things. The other aspect I think has affected them to some degree during the slump is Marcus Morris being out. They don't have a scorer in the second unit, anybody who's consistent. So Brad's been staggering guys. You'll see Kyrie out there in the second group. You'll see Jaylen Brown or Tatum. And if they're not going, or if he needs to get them out of the game for one reason or another, they really struggle to put the ball in the basket. So Morris is kind of a volume shooter, but he can get you 15 points a game. They need somebody like that with the second group.
Yeah, Morris returned yesterday, 1 of 7, 2 points. He's not healthy. I mean, that's an issue for them. I couldn't agree with you more. I've thought that it really, during this spell, you've looked at it and you've been able to see what their weakness is. They're a rotation player, rotation scorer short. And I think that might even be the case with Morris. I still think they're going to have to add to this team and bring another guy in there. The defense, I mean, statistically, they're number 2 in the league still. It's 98.5 points per game, but it's been a letdown of late. I mean, you're looking at the Wizards getting 111 points. We've seen teams like Indiana break 100 points on them. I don't think the same level of defensive focus is there. I think Kyrie Irving's defense has regressed somewhat. Their calling card early on was defense. I don't know if that defense was something that was sustainable for the rest of the year or if there's just more of a focus now offensively, because a lot of people were talking about the offense not being efficient enough.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true about Kyrie and the defensive effort all along. You know, Brad Beal for the Wizards is one of the purest shooters in the league, and
I love him as a player, by the way.
I do too. I really do, and he keeps getting better. But he shot 10 for 25 in that game, and of the 25, he probably missed 5 wide open ones. They were really, really lucky that he didn't knock down 2 or 3 of those. And you'd think after you left a guy like Bradley Beal open, you would realize, I'm not letting this happen again, and buckle down a little bit more. And that hasn't happened. Even Marcus Smart seemed to have some mental lapses on defense. So this is something It's probably partially because they're tired because of the stretch, and that's justifiable. But when the effort isn't there, and it hasn't been on a couple different occasions, especially in that Wizards game, that is alarming. And Brad needs his practice time to get these guys back on track.
Yeah, he's dying to get a practice in. I think part of that, too, would be getting a situation where they can run some more plays for Jason Tatum. He had the 20 points, but he only took 9 shots. That's incredibly efficient, which is great, but they could use a little more offense outside of Kyrie, particularly in the fourth quarter. So hopefully they can find a way to integrate and feature really Tatum a little bit more offensively. Looking on the bright side of this, to not be all doom and gloom, I mean, they did play on Christmas Day, you know, but let's be in the giving spirit here. I thought it was encouraging that Terry Rozier played well because he struggled this month, and I think he's a guy that's big for them off the bench. He had 16 points against the Wizards. He hit 4 of 6 three-pointers. He hasn't been shooting well. That's a guy that they need. They really need him to step up. Even if he steps up, I still feel like they need one more rotation guy, one more scorer off the bench. But it would really help if they can count on him consistently to score off the bench.
Yeah, he's a good energy guy, too. And he was one of the few, maybe the only one, who really brought that. I guess Tatum did as well, who really brought that yesterday. I'm curious about this injured player exception still, because I feel there really hasn't been anything to use it on so far, the $8 million that they could use to sign a player because Gordon Hayward was lost. But I also look at it and wonder if it's an indication that they still think there's a decent 50-50 chance of Hayward coming back.
Oh, I'm with you on that. I think they're totally sandbagging this thing. I think they expect to have him back.
Too.
I think he's coming back.
With no expectation. But yet they still kind of put it out there, don't they? They show him shooting from the chair and, oh, Gordon's here tonight. Look at that.
Well, you're right about that. And here's the thing that is telling to me. I think they don't want to put any expectations on him to come back, but I think they think he can. But every time you ask someone over there, and we had Wick Grousebeck on the Season Ticket Podcast,
right,
and ask, they never rule it out. They never say, no, you know, he's done for the year. We want him to just take his time and come back next year. They never, you know, they say, oh, we don't expect him to come back, or we're acting like he's not going to come back, or we're conducting ourselves like we won't have Gordon this year. They never just out and out say, no, Gordon's not going to be back.
Yeah, well, you know what they should do? If Isaiah comes back for that January 3rd game with
the Cavaliers,
drop Hayward on him. They'll never see it coming.
That would be quite the surprise, I will say that. Speaking of the Cavaliers, they are right behind the Celtics in the Eastern Conference, but when we talk about that relationship, we're not talking about the number one overall seed right now. That belongs to, believe it or not, the Toronto Raptors, who are now a game ahead of the Celtics. The Raptors are 23-8. They have a better winning percentage than the 27-10 Celtics. And then, as I mentioned, Cleveland a game and a half behind the Seas at 24-10. So the Celtics no longer have that number one seed, Chad. It's so early in the season, but does that mean anything to you at this point?
Sure it does. I think it's going to end up being a three-team race between those three.
You're a Toronto believer.
I'm a DeRozan believer. I love that guy. He fell right out of the 80s into the modern NBA, the mid-range game. And you remember, you go back earlier this year, he had a shot that he makes 94 times out of 100 to beat the Celtics, and he missed. That would have been one of the losses in that 16-game streak where the breaks went the Celtics' way. I think that's a really good team, though. They're well-rounded. Dwayne Casey's a good coach. The backcourt's been together forever and play really well together, Kyle Lowry being the point guard. So, yeah, I think they're in there. I think ultimately they're three, and the Celtics and Cavaliers in some order are one, too. But I have a lot of respect for the Raptors.
I agree with you on that in terms of it being Celtics and Cavaliers and that those are the two teams. I like Toronto, obviously Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan. But that core's been together sort of for a while with those two guys. I know Ibaka hasn't been there that long, but I just don't think that they can surpass the Celtics or Cleveland. And I think there's a big stretch coming up for the Celtics. You talked about all the games they've been playing, but you referenced that Houston game, which is on Thursday. They have that game on Thursday. They play the Brooklyn Nets on New Year's Eve, and then they play the Cavaliers January 3rd. That's a Wednesday. I want to see this stretch coming up here because you're going to face some really, really good teams, and let's see if the Celtics can turn it back on, or if this is a bigger issue right now. Because I think right now, you and I are sort of in agreement. This is a little bit of a lull, and it's happening because of the schedule. But if you go and face Houston at home and Cleveland at home and lose, then I think it's reasonable to ask whether you truly are an elite team in the NBA.
Yeah, I think what we're ultimately going to find out is that they're a 55-plus win team and not this 60-something win team that they looked like when they were ripping off all those wins in a row.
Well, Chad, this was a lot of fun. We covered a lot of ground. Much like the Celtics, I'm kind of exhausted, but thank you very much.
I have
much.
That effect.
Yeah. Yeah, your family did warn me about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But thanks for coming on Season Ticket Chat. It's always fun to talk sports with you.
Thanks, man. Always good talking to you, too.
All right, that's Chad Finn, Boston Globe online columnist. He's also the media columnist here. You can find him on Twitter. He's at GlobeChadFinn. He's actually one of our wittiest tweeters. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.